House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology, April 5th, 2007, in Hearing Room E at 1 p.m.
I'm going to call to order the House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology for Thursday, April 5th, 2007. Thank you all for being here. We're going to change the order of things from the published agenda a little bit. I'm going to start with SDR 20, and I'm going to open a public hearing on that. Senator, thank you for your time. We appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you for changing your schedule. I appreciate that. Senator Mona Sanderson is, and I were co-carriers. Excuse me. My name is David Nelson. I'm a state senator living in Pendleton, Senate District 29. Senator Mona Sanderson and I have been working with the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, and during the interim, they undertook a plan. They want to do a pilot project, basically, and they're trying to get some federal funding. And so we came up with this Senate Joint Resolution 20, and it would declare state policy to promote and facilitate activities by Oregon's healthcare and education communities. And what we're finding out in the area, in the countryside, and the cities, and every place, so we have several systems. And so what we're trying to do is create a system of systems so people talk to each other. And particularly, this bill is really focused towards the healthcare part of it. And it came out of the Coordinating Council Health Education Committee. And we're looking for support from the House on this. It passed out of the Senate. And we were very interested in just trying to get this on a fast track as best we could so that they could apply for some funding for some federal grants. So that's... there's probably folks in the audience that know a lot more about the details of this and how this thing actually works. And so if that's fine with you folks, I'd answer any questions that I could answer.
Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. Oh, one
quick question.
Representative Thatcher.
How did it come out of the Senate? Was it unanimous?
I believe it was a unanimous vote. Yeah, I didn't see anything in my file, but I believe it was unanimous vote.
Members, Representative Thatcher, 27-0 is the vote in the Senate.
Yeah, there was three gone, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time. I'm going to ask Joe Bell to come up. You bet.
Good afternoon, Representative Riley and members of the committee. Thank you for holding a fast track on SDR 20. I'm here in a sort of a dual capacity today. I am treasurer of the board for the Telehealth Alliance of Oregon, which is the organization that has sort of been spearheading the collaborative effort in the state to put together an application, if you will, for the FCC available funding. The reason we have it on a fast track is that the deadline to get the applications in is May 7th, and we were hoping to use the resolution as the legislature's show of support for...
Pardon me, if you would put your state your name for the record.
Sorry, thought I did. Joe Bell.
Okay, great, thank you.
Sorry.
You may have, we missed it.
And the other hat that I'm wearing today is I'm delivering testimony on behalf of the Oregon Hospital Association of Hospitals and Health Systems for Andy Easton, who is unable to be here. And basically, you have the written testimony in front of you. The Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems is probably one of the larger partners that we are working with in this effort, because the FCC application is all about providing rural health care and making sure that there's access to telecommunications, adequate telecommunications, to deliver health care services in rural areas. And part of the many of those many of the hospitals in the association are small rural hospitals, and so they are very supportive of this effort. And I think I'll turn it over to Kim Hoffman, who is president of the Telehealth Alliance of Oregon, to tell you more about it because she works with it more on a daily basis. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Kim Hoffman. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today. I am the telehealth coordinator for OHSU and also an ex officio member of the ORTCC, but I'm speaking to you today as chair of the Telehealth Alliance of Oregon. And on behalf of TAO, I'd like to encourage your consideration and approval of this very important joint resolution. As Joe said, we're looking to have it as support to our FCC application, which I can talk about a little bit later. The Telehealth Alliance of Oregon is a not-for-profit organization, and our goal is to advance telehealth services throughout Oregon. And just as a note of background, I don't know how familiar you are with telemedicine services, but they include remote clinical diagnosis, patient consultations, the sharing of electronic health records, as well as distance health education to patients, clinicians, and other community members. And because today we have such a shortage of healthcare providers in our rural areas, sometimes access to specialized care and sometimes even basic care can be quite limited. Telemedicine can provide access to those kinds of services to our rural communities so that they have access to quality health care. And distance education can provide opportunities for students in those areas so that they might continue their health care education in their rural communities. In order to provide the telehealth services, all hospitals, clinics, public health buildings, and other health care facilities, as well as our educational facilities, need access to high-speed, affordable connectivity, both in our urban and rural areas. Obviously, we're targeting our rural areas, but in order to have the connections to the specialists, we need to have those opportunities in our urban areas as well. We already have a lot of individual networks in Oregon. Every one of our health systems, like Samaritan, Peace Health, Cascade Health in Bend, Providence, they have access to all of their member hospitals. And Southern Oregon, Asante Health System, along with others, created the Southern Oregon Medical Network, which connects hospitals, clinics, imaging centers, and other healthcare facilities in that area of the state on a high-speed connection. It's really quite cool. The NEROS network, which is the OUS network, connects all of our universities as well as many of our community colleges and ESDs. And the state, of course, has connections to the prisons as well as many public health buildings. SGR 20 promotes and facilitates activities to create interoperability between all of these networks by establishing shared standards and peering points, which will allow more access to the networks. We're trying to create a network of networks rather than new infrastructure. We want to take advantage of what we have now. We're calling the network that we're trying to put together using the FCC funds the Oregon Health Network. And since about December, TAO's coordinated efforts with a lot of people across the state, from healthcare, education, telecommunications providers, public safety efforts, and we're trying to build a sustainable business plan for this Oregon Health Network that would include a technology plan that would create peering points and expanded access points to all facilities within Oregon. We're intending to use this business plan as part of our application to the FCC. The FCC will provide 85% of the funding to create this network, so we really want to take advantage of that if we can. Because SJR 20 sets forth a policy for the state of Oregon to facilitate collaboration among our healthcare, education, and telecommunications providers, it's really very important to what we're doing. On behalf of TAO, again, I'd like to reiterate our support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Questions? You don't yet know what sort of hardware you're going to be using. That's not. This is a plan to develop a plan. Is that right?
The FCC application actually allows us to create infrastructure, which are basically the pipes and then the hardware that would connect the pipes together. So, yes, we are in the process of laying all of that out now. We did an RFI that we sent out to about 102 different organizations to collect information on where we're missing access points throughout Oregon and what it would take to get those access points in place. That would include not only the actual physical connections to the wires, but also the hardware that would link everything together. John Dolan from OUS was going to be here to
He's
testify.
Here.
Oh, is he?
And he can help.
he can answer the technical questions.
He can answer the technical questions.
Yeah, he's
good. I'll hold those for him then. Thank
yeah.
you. Because I have a couple more.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, he's. I'm slightly technical, but he's very good at that.
Except for turning off his cell phone.
That's right.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you both very much. I appreciate you being here. And I'm going to call together, if I might, John Nolan and Mark Lawyer, would you? Get the techies all up here together. So if you just introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
I'd be happy to. My name is John Dolan. I'm the Associate Director of Network Services for Oregon State University. And I apologize for being late to the committee. I did bring some written testimony, but as I'm out of context here, I think I'll just make myself available for any questions that you might have.
Okay, I'm going to hold questions until we finish the panel and then address them to the whole panel. Mark?
Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Mark Ryer. I am the administrator for the State Data Center. With me also is Al Gripoli, who is the manager of the State Network Services, part of DAS State Data Center as well. I did want to talk a bit about how the State Data Center can support and contribute to SJR 20. I think it was just said in a previous testimony that one of the concepts that we're looking at is a network of networks. I believe that there are many areas where we can have a unified network, create some significant economies of scale, and collaborate a great deal with the State Data Center and ORTCC working collaboratively together for the mutual goals. However, I would like to discuss how we can contribute to SJR 20, we being the State Data Center, and what we're responsible for. Under ORS 283-500 and ORS 283-510, which was enacted back in 1995, we're responsible for the contracting management of telecommunications services for the state and its agencies. And specifically, 283-500 has very similar goals as SJR 20, and that is to use information technology in education, healthcare, economic development, and government services to improve economic opportunities and quality of life for all Oregonians, to stimulate demand, to encourage, enable long-term infrastructure innovation and improvement. And the planning process shall include organize users in new ways to aggregate demand, reduce costs, and create support networks. Encourage collaboration between communities of interest by geographic area, economic sector, and encourage competition among technology and service providers. And that last point I'll be talking to in just a second. These goals are of ORS 283.500 and .510 are requisite and supportive, I believe, of those in SJR 20. However, in order to achieve those goals, we need some clarification and perhaps some removal of certain language in 283.510. Specifically, in 283.510, there's language that says the Oregon Department of Administrative Services, by contract, shall acquire advanced digital communication services from telecommunication providers or a consortium of such providers. Contracts under this section shall provide that all responsibility for construction, installation, operation, and maintenance of the network shall remain with the contracted with the contracting provider. The one point of clarification that we need for the state's ability to basically build and manage its own fiber optic network. For example, today the state owns hundreds of miles of dark fiber, that is fiber in the ground but unused, not lit up, as we say in the technical community, throughout of Oregon. It's an immense asset, but one that we're not sure that we can utilize at this point. We've had three Department of Justice interpretations of 283.510 over the years, two that say that we can provide telecommunications for the services for the state, for our internal use and for consortiums, and one that says that we cannot. And so we definitely need some clarification on that, unless the majority of the Department of Justice's rules in that regard. It's like having, if I use a highway example, it's like having hundreds of miles of highway available, not being used because we can't provide the access ramps for our community, for our partners, for telemedicine or whatever the communities might be in order to use that. And of course, that's quite an inhibitor to all of the uses, whether it's telemedicine, whether it's online education, or economic development. Now, I believe the previous testimony also indicated that our routing and our access to exchange points, the major intersections of telecommunications networks, is quite limited. Part of that is because of the lack of competition. Part of that is because we're not sure how much the state data center and DAS can participate in creating those access points or exchanges. With clarification, there's much that we can do. And again, to use that highway analogy, having good highways, even if we can use them, is equally important, if not more important, on how we route traffic. If we route traffic over many, many exchanges, many, many stoplights, if you will, then you can imagine that the performance, particularly in critical functions such as telemedicine, would be degraded to the point that it would not be useful. While it's good for traffic such as email, it's not good for high bandwidth traffic such as telemedicine. So the peering points, the exchanges, the whole architecture of the routing is very, very important for us to be able to control and manage so that we can ensure that we have the performance that is required for SJR 20. So I ask that some clarification be given for ORS 283.510. Now, I do want to point out that does pertain to SJR 20, but it's also in general what I believe is very little competition for the state's telecommunications business, despite, notwithstanding, the goals of this legislation, and that was in 283.500 to increase competition. This, too, I believe, has a negative impact on our cost, our performance, access, and availability of our telecommunications networks. The state, as you can imagine, is one of the largest consumers of telecommunications in Oregon, yet we've had no competition on telecommunications bids in the last 13 years. There has been only one bidder for all of our contracts. We're currently negotiating again with that sole bidder a new contract for the state of Oregon's enterprise network, which the current five-year contract expires this coming June. While we're still in negotiations, it appears that rates will increase and increase substantially. We spend over $45 million biennium within the state for our own internal use, for our own telecommunications. And so you can imagine where even a small increase or a small decrease will have a material impact on our budgets and our cost. Now, I've been in the business 30 years, and I don't remember telecommunications increasing over any five-year period over those 30 years. And I believe that competition has a lot to do with that. I bring this up because competition is as important today as it was back in 1995 for ORS when ORS 283.500 was enacted. So removing the ambiguity and restrictions in 283.510 allows for the state of Oregon the flexibility that we need to cost-effectively procure and build a world-class telecommunications network to support SJR 20 as well as Oregon's economic, education, and health policies, and to collaboratively work with ORTCC and other public and private entities. Now, as part of the state's data center goals of consolidation, we are in the process of architecting and re-engineering our main internal state network. Today, if you could picture a very large network pipe that traverses from Portland down to Eugene with a stopping point here in Salem, our network is basically a series of one-way spokes without redundancy to all of the various locations out in the state of Oregon. That requires a significant amount of re-engineering. There's a tremendous amount of cost savings, but most importantly, when we talk about telemedicine and economic development, having a single fiber ring around the state of Oregon, which is being architected by Al's team and Cisco in collaboration, would be extremely important, not just for the state's internal business, but for the business of local communities, TCC, the hospitals, and the various networks out there. I would suggest that while we can't consolidate all of the networks out there, that given the shape of the networks that we have today, a network of networks is probably not the optimal architecture, but that we should take this opportunity to work collaboratively together and come up with an optimal architecture, whatever that might be, from all of the various users of the network. It's not new. We need a unified Oregon network and the architecture along with the associated policies, procedures, and governance. Other states such as North Carolina, New York, and Ohio have been very successful in implementing a unified architecture and a system of telecommunications highways, which has served them quite well and have offered a tremendous competitive advantage for economic development. We wish to continue to collaborate with ORTCC and others to achieve our mutual goals and interests. We believe that we should use the scale economies to build a network infrastructure irrespective of the particular function that rides on those particular networks, but to do so that serves all functions, and that the State Data Center offers our support and cooperation to help achieve those goals. So with that, I will be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Representative Thatcher.
Maybe this is more of a question for you, Mr. Chair, but it concerned me when you brought up this fact that there's a lack of competition, and a lack of competition usually makes your prices go up. And I'm just wondering, can we look into that a little further? Is that something we can do outside of this?
I plan to.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. I listened to that for a long time and tried to figure out exactly where you are on this bill. and I didn't hear it. I know you're signed up as being neutral, and that's a good, political position to be in your spot. Does this bill, in its form, prevent you from working with this group to get this network in a way that the state feels it should be?
Chair Riley, members of the committee, yes, I did sign up as neutral, but I'm a techie at heart and a businessman as well, and there's no question in my mind that the state of Oregon will benefit and deserves a far better unified network that we have today, and in so much that this bill, as well as the consolidation of the State Data Center, helps facilitate that effort, and I believe that it will. Then I'm all in support of a great, unified, well-architected, high-performing network for the state of Oregon.
Okay, that answered that question. The problem you have with no competition. How can we help you with that? Is there anything that we can do with this bill? Do we need to look at another bill? What's your recommendation?
Chair Riley, one of the areas that would help the state, and I don't believe that this bill binds, and I don't believe that the communities out there, whether it's Multnomah County, the city of Ashland, whatever the case may be, has this restriction. I believe it's just the state of Oregon itself, that if we can build access points, peering points, exchanges, then that avails us to additional competition.
Okay.
And so those are the on-ramps, if you will, where we can get several bidders to come in on a single bid, whatever the case may be.
What I would like from you, Mark, is I would like you to make an appointment to see me and discuss that further.
Chair Riley, I'd be glad to do that, and we'll do so.
And did you have, just here to answer questions, is that any further questions of any of this panel? Thank you very much. I appreciate your being here. You didn't give very many remarks. Did you want to give any remarks before you go?
Chair Riley, thank you for the opportunity. I just did want to point out that the current resolution before you does charge the ORTCC with looking at proposed legislation to help facilitate this for next session. So the bill, as stated, would lay the groundwork for some of the questions about what part of Oregon statute currently is problematic as we try to move forward with this initiative. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to call a 5-minute recess. On the Senate Joint Resolution 20, I'm going to... before I end that, is there anyone else who would like to testify on this? Okay, I'm going to end the public hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 20. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Joint Resolution 20.
Chair Riley, I move SJR 20 to the floor to be adopted.
Thank you. Representative Gerard moves Senate Joint Resolution 20 to the floor to be adopted. Any discussion? Call the roll.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
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 Aye. Senate Joint Resolution, having received the required majority, is sent to the floor for adoption, and I will carry it. Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3414. Representative Thatcher, did you want to testify on this or not?
I think I will defer to the experts that are in this room and allow them to get right.
Thank you. Patrick, would you give us a summary on this bill, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. House Bill 3414 allows a county court the option of appointing up to one county fair board member who is a resident of an adjoining county. This measure has no fiscal or revenue impact.
Okay. I'm going to ask all three, Commissioner Lewis, Kara Fisher, and John McCulley, to all come at once, if that's acceptable to you.
Thank you, Chair Riley, committee members. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. For the record, I'm Leslie Lewis, Yamhill County Commissioner, and I want to thank you for holding a hearing on this bill, and thank you, Representative Thatcher, for sponsoring this bill. This bill does come at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties. We did take a vote in our legislative committee to support this bill. But I will tell you that it does come from Yamhill County specifically as a request, although Ms. Fisher will indicate that other counties, perhaps some other counties, would have similar circumstances. This bill is very important to our county. It would allow our county governing body to appoint a fair board member who now lives in an adjoining county. At the time she was originally appointed, she lived in Yamhill County. She lived in Yamhill County for many years. She continues to work for a major employer in Yamhill County, and as part of her responsibility with her employer, she's supposed to do community service in the area in which their business serves. Her children still attend school, or one child, I believe, attends school in Yamhill County. She's been a very valuable Fair Board member. I don't know how much you folks know about Fair Boards, but they don't always necessarily around the state work cohesively, and many fairs have difficulties, but we have thank you, Chair Riley, committee members. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. For the record, I'm Leslie Lewis, Yamhill County Commissioner, and I want to thank you for holding a hearing on this bill, and thank you, Representative Thatcher, for sponsoring this bill. This bill does come at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties. We did take a vote in our legislative committee to support this bill. But I will tell you that it does come from Yamhill County specifically as a request, although Ms. Fisher will indicate that other counties, perhaps some other counties, would have similar circumstances. This bill is very important to our county. It would allow our county governing body to appoint a Fair Board member who now lives in an adjoining county. At the time she was originally appointed, she lived in Yamhill County. She lived in Yamhill County for many years. She continues to work for a major employer in Yamhill County, and as part of her responsibility with her employer, she's supposed to do community service in the area in which their business serves. Her children still attend school, or one child, I believe, attends school in Yamhill County. She's been a very valuable Fair Board member. I don't know how much you folks know about Fair Boards, but they don't always necessarily around the state work cohesively, and many fairs have difficulties, but we have a very cohesive working five-member Fair Board. Our fair at one time, when she was appointed in 2001, our fair at that time was $50,000 in debt, or nearly so. That was, I think, is not uncommon for some fairs around the state. But during the time that Wendy Crawford has served on our fair board, she was our treasurer, our vice chair, and now our chair of our board. Our fair board has gone from, they have paid off the entire debt to the county, and they have been in the black for the last six fiscal years, and they will be in the black again this coming June 30. In fact, they will be substantially in the black June 30. Our fair is just, everything is working very well with the fair and the year-round event center, and we really would like to be able, the board would like to be able to reappoint Wendy Crawford when she comes up for reappointment this summer. Youth in our county, 4-H'ers and FFA youth, are allowed to go to other counties to the annual county fair. We regularly have youth that come to our county from Washington County to show at our fair, and in fact they can win at our fair and go to state fair, you know, from our county. So it seems to make sense that we should be allowed to appoint at least one fair board member who would be from an adjoining county. So we would very much urge your aye vote on this bill. I have handed a testimony from our county commissioners in support of the bill, and I have also handed you testimony from our fair board. I won't read it. These are the four. I didn't ask Wendy to sign her own letter, but these are the four other fair board members, and they are urging your support of House Bill 3414 as well. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I would take any questions.
Questions? Yes, Representative Edwards.
Could you explain the funding sources for fairs? I know there's a state allocation, but how much comes from the state, how much from the county, how much is supported just money generated at the fair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards. I could speak to my fair, and perhaps Mr. McCauley could speak to fairs in general. We do, as you know, receive a grant from the state. This coming year, we're expecting that to be approximately $48,000. Our fair has a budget of $411,000, so that will give you a perspective. And that's not, when I say fair, it's fair and the year-round event center. So that's our total budget, $411,000. $48,000 is the state grant. The county gives $57,000 to the fair on an annual basis, so slightly, what is that, $105,000 is public funding. The balance of the funds that the fair has, they raise through the rental of our facilities. We rent stalls. We have a number of horse shows. We host regularly. It's called the Oregon High School Equestrian Team. We have six of those shows this year. One of the Oregon High School Equestrian Teams are in regions around the state, and we are currently the host facility for, I believe it's called the Northwest Region. It's Washington County and north of there. And we have recently picked up the region that was over in the Malala area has just now started to show at our facility. We also have other kinds of horse shows. We have dog events. We rent out a building called the ADEC building that it's an indoor venue. So groups like Ducks Unlimited, just various groups rent that facility. And then, of course, the fair itself, we have admissions, we have sponsorships, and concessions. So those are all of our different sources of funding. But I like to say we are the most entrepreneurial part of county government because we have to raise most of our own money by being successful in our fair, and the fair board has been very successful in the last 6 years, and I do attribute part of that to Ms. Crawford's service.
Yeah, Representative Edwards.
And I think you already touched on this, but I can't remember. Currently, the fair board members are appointed by the county commissioners.
That's correct.
Oh. Got it. Thanks.
So my only question is, what county did she move to?
She moved to Polk. It's just south of Yamhill County.
I was going to say you can't steal her back, but if it's not Washington County, I'm fine. Any other questions? Whoever wants to testify next, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I won't repeat what Commissioner Lewis has shared with you so efficiently already, but we have heard from some other counties who have run into a similar conflict, primarily in areas where county lines don't follow school district boundaries or tribal lands. In those cases, there have been individuals who've worked with youth in various programs connected with a school district. They then can't take that service a step farther and serve as a leader for their broader community on that particular county's fair board, or a case where a tribal member resides on tribal land that encompasses more than one county. Again, a situation where program lines don't particularly follow county lines. Our counties are committed to providing quality fairs and providing great management of their fairgrounds, and do so through the dedicated support of the volunteers who seem to give tirelessly to their efforts. This only enhances statute and allows counties to provide greater opportunity for folks to be leaders in their communities. Thank you for allowing us to appear today. I'd be happy to respond to questions. Oh, and I forgot to enter the record. I'm Kara Fisher with the Association of Oregon Counties.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John McCulley, representing the Oregon Fairs Association. We, too, are in support of this legislation. We think that it will address some of those occurrences that you've heard about. We believe that people who are appointed to the fair board, even if they come from an adjacent county, probably have a connection to the county where the fair is, and we believe that county commissioners can make those judgments adequately to make sure that the best people are serving on the county fair boards. I could also quickly try to answer Representative Edwards' question on funding. I'm trying to remember these numbers. Statewide, it's about $1.5 million, $1.6 million comes from the state to the fairs. About $6 million is generated
during the time of those 36 county fairs. Another $6 million is generated during the interim between the fair. And I think it's about $2 million comes from other sources like grants, transit lodging tax, and county general funds, just in general terms. I can get the specific numbers if you really want to see those.
Questions? Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I have a question. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this yet. I know you're all here supporting it. I also wonder about the citizens of the actual county and whether there might be some feelings among them that this is taking an opportunity away from them that they aren't going to have. So, and I'm not even sure what questions to ask at this point, but I certainly would like to give it some thought because I think if I was voting for it right now, I'd probably be a no.
Chair Riley, Representative Byer, I understand that wasn't a question. I would like to point out that statutorily we are allowed to have up to 7 members on the fair board. Our board currently only has 5, and that's actually at the request of the fair board itself, that they've been 7 before and found out that they kind of divided up into folks who didn't get along very well, so they asked to go back to 5, so the county commissioners granted that request. But we would have the ability to appoint 2 more folks from our county, and that would leave us with, 6 Yamhill County folks and 1 person from Polk County. And it is permissive. This is not something every county commission in the state would do, and I do believe that, as Mr. McCauley said, commissioners would only do this if the person had a real connection with the county and it made sense for them to continue to be involved.
Representative Girard.
Thank you, Chair Riley. It is for Mr. McCauley. I come from a rural area, but it's Marion County, and parts of Linn County. Most agencies, committees, most everything, it's hard to keep the positions filled. Are there a lot of counties that have problems even filling these positions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, I guess the simple answer is yes, there are some that are constantly struggling to recruit members to the county fair board, especially when you get to like Wheeler County or Sherman County, where probably at some time in their lives everybody served on the fair board. It's a little facetious, but there aren't that many people there. So it does become difficult. In larger counties, generally not. There are people who really do want to step forward and serve. And I think in this circumstance, I believe it would be more like the situation that Commissioner Lewis has described, where someone has been serving on the fair board and for some reason has to move to a different county but yet wants to continue to serve. That's the cases I have heard about among our membership. That seems to be the way it works.
Do you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, if I may respond as well, Mr. McCauley is correct that does happen, but also in larger counties. I have direct experience having worked for Marion County for a number of years. The county fair was one of my responsibilities, and it is a complicated task, a very time-intensive task, to serve on the fair board. So when you find a qualified individual who is interested and willing to make that commitment, it would be wonderful to have that opportunity to use that person in that way. I ran into it myself in Marion County when people would be involved in 4-H programs through the Salem-Keizer School District and happened to live in Polk County. They had great interest in Marion County's fair. They were connected with Marion County's fair, not Polk's, but because they happened to live on the other side of the river, they were ineligible to provide their leadership in this capacity.
Yes, Representative Durant.
I just have a comment. I live in a district that, if you go up to Santa Ann, where I live, the other side of the river is the other county, and so I have several cities of which are on the boundary, so that if you're in Mill City, but if you'd be on the Linn County side, you would be for Linn County. On the Marion County side, obviously, you'd be for Marion County. So I could understand that somebody living in Marion County might have an interest in the Linn County Fair. So I can understand that.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm I don't have a problem with this. You know, I've been looking at the reason I asked the questions about the money is, to me, there's an accountability. There needs to be a line of accountability. I don't care if a member of a fair board lives in that county or not, as long as there's an elected official, being a county commissioner, that's responsible, and at that local level, they can hash that out, and they are going to be held accountable by their voters. And so that's why I'm okay with this. I wanted to get an understanding of where the money comes from to run fair operations. I know some of it comes from the state, but given that we give money to all counties equally, my concerns with that are a leave. So,
being from Washington County, we have fights about who can be on the fair board. So it's hard for me to understand, you know, having trouble finding someone to be on the fair board. I mean, we really, it's a big deal in Washington County, especially right now. If there are no more questions, you have any other questions? Thank you all very much. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Anybody else who would like to testify on this bill? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3414. I am going to hold off and do a work session a little later in today's meeting, but right now I'm going to open a public hearing as soon as someone comes from another committee. We're breathlessly waiting for someone to come from another committee to testify. So, yeah, we're going to just stand at ease for a minute. We're outside of public hearings at this point. While we're waiting, I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 34. Oop, never mind. Never mind.
We're so close.
Yes. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3456. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. State Representative Tom Butler from House District 60. And thank you very much for accommodating my schedule. We've got a rousing debate on wet tobacco versus 49-cent cans of the same and who ought to be using it and how much the tax ought to be. This House Bill 3456 deals with the Burns Archive Center, which was constructed in part with general funds of the state and in part with lottery funds of the state. There are ongoing negotiations for the disposition of that center, with the possibility. What it is, it's a backup center. Originally, it was set up to back up all state records on a regular basis, as well as a mandatory place for backup of all of the lottery records, as lottery tickets and lottery transactions are ongoing. I have been in the center in the last 6 months. The lottery section of it is very secure. It's got computers humming and buzzing with every computer transaction or with every lottery transaction that's ongoing as it is happening, and then everything is being backed up there. This is an important activity of the Lottery Commission itself. But they would like to go ahead and enter into an arrangement where a private treaty could be entered into, where this may be sold to the local Native American sovereign, that is the Burns Paiute. And the Burns Paiute have an opportunity to work with other archival systems worldwide to archive in that particular location. We recognize that there would be a time of a certain number of certainly at least months and perhaps years that before the entire lottery backup system could be moved to an independent additional location. The reason that this was originally selected as the choice for an archive center is that the giant lake, Salt Lake bed, which is part of the Great Salt Lake Basin, upon which Burns, Oregon, is, and most of Harney County is located, is geologically very, very safe and solid and not subject to the kinds of tremors and earthquakes that the rest of the state has experienced. And so for that reason, this independent location 300 plus miles from Salem has been deemed to be a very good site excuse me, for this kind of information to be archived there. And as I say, this not all state agencies have ever joined in archiving their information there. There were questions about whether or not DAS ought to be doing it, and now that we have an actual computer information center here, that gives a whole new element to the discussion. And there are, excuse me, with the advent of additional new technology, and I don't need to explain that to this committee, there are different methods of backing up in different locations much of the information which has been previously solely archived for the state of Oregon in this center. So this bill authorizes or directs the sale. We would like to have, and I do appreciate and honor you, Mr. Chair, for honoring this request for a public hearing. The negotiations with the Department of Administrative Services and the Department and the Lottery Commission, Director Dale Penn is here today. Those ongoing discussions and those ongoing negotiations continue to be ongoing, and I think that they're working in a very amicable fashion, and I think they will continue to do that, particularly now that we have this bill in play to help folks kind of focus in on the scope on moving forward with something to actually help them finalize a deal.
Questions? Thank you very
Thank
much.
You again.
Get back to your fight.
All right. Thank you. If it's enough to drive you to chew in the back.
That's a good job. George Naughton.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, I'm George Naughton, the Administrator of the Budget and Management Division within the Department of Administrative Services. Because I deal primarily with budgets, I have not had the opportunity to speak in front of this group before. But on behalf of the Department of Administrative Services, I'm here to provide you some information in your decision about House Bill 3456. As many of you know, the Department of Administrative Services and Oregon State Lottery in 1999 were directed to develop a joint archival center in Burns, Oregon, on land owned by the Oregon Youth Authority. The facility was developed at a cost of about $1.4 million, half of which came from lottery fund proceeds, and the other half came from the Department of Administrative Services through the sale of certificates of participation. Since that time, and after operating the facility for several years, we've decided it would be cheaper for us to sell that facility or get rid of that facility and get the same services here locally in Salem. What we have been doing since that time have been working with the State Lottery, with the Department of Administrative Services, and the Oregon Youth Authority to initially lease and then sell the property to the Paiute tribe. Those negotiations are ongoing, and what we want to present for you today is that the provisions to sell the property for $1 may violate ORS 270, which requires when the state sells real property that we have to get an appraisal, and then also get the fair market value out of the property. And the negotiations continue to go on, and as we see it, we think that that is a viable way to proceed. So that with those concerns or with those issues, I'm open for questions, Mr. Chair.
Don't see any questions.
Well,
Representative Rob.
Do you need something in a statute for us to set up the sale? I understand that you don't want to sell it for a dollar, but if we amended this bill so instead of a dollar it'd be fair market value, would that be more of what you're looking for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, I do not believe that we need to have any additional statutory change if it's an arm's-length agreement, negotiating good faith with fair market value, and that's what we're working on currently.
Okay.
That would not require additional legislative action. We have the authority to do that now. It's the sale below fair market value that we start to get into trouble.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dale Penn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dale Penn. I'm director of the Oregon Lottery. I apologize. Several of you have heard me at different times talk about constitutional dedication of lottery dollars, but not every member of the committee has heard that. The concern we would have about this bill, besides the issue that was just raised by DAS, was the concept that lottery dollars are constitutionally directed and preserved for education, parks, water, and economic development. And this bill, the effect of this bill, would be to divert lottery funds away from one of those four purposes for a private entity. Because of that, we would have to oppose this. Now, I will simply say that this center is a backup, a warm site backup center for us. It isn't an archive center for us. It's an archive center for DAS. It really is designed to be, if our data center in Salem was destroyed, we would be able to move to the data center in Burns, take several weeks, upgrade some equipment there, and become operational again. That's the purpose for the center. We are in the midst of negotiating a long-term contract with our gaming system vendor. The vendor, and what other lotteries do, is they have backup centers in regional IT facilities for their vendor, so that you're actually located in the vendor's building. Your machines are caged off in a little area. We'll have security for that. Maybe that's Iowa there. This is Oregon here. There's Montana over here. But as part of our base price of our contract and services from our vendor, we would have these backup services. So we'd actually have greater flexibility, better security, and save quite a bit of money. That's the reason we are interested in selling our part of the center and then moving in our new contract to a vendor's location. So that's the reason. We have cooperated fully and continue to work with Harney County, Burns Paiute Tribe, and the Wadok Corporation, who is really designed legally to make the purchase. We believe that's moving forward well, and we're cooperating with them in completing that transaction. I would echo the testimony just heard. I believe legislation would actually harm the process. But it's moving forward now. We hope we'll be completed very soon, and I think it will be a good opportunity for the tribe. We want to help facilitate that. We intend to be a paying lessor or lessee for at least 18 months under the Paiute ownership, maintaining our security to help give them some base. It takes us that period of time to transition to our vendor's location. So we believe we can help the process as well. So.
Yes, Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Usually when you see a bill like this up in our committee, it means that maybe things aren't going quite as smooth as maybe some people think they are in negotiations. From your way of thinking, is there any truth to that here? Or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Byer, I can only tell you that I have had discussions with the judge in Harney County from the county commission there, and with the consultant for the Burns Paiute Tribe, and they told me really by email today and orally on the phone yesterday that they believe that the negotiation process was moving forward well, and they thought that was the best way to proceed.
Thank you.
But I can certainly understand Representative Butler's desire to protect and guide activities that occur in his area.
Well said.
An admirable
purpose. Other questions? Thank you very much, Director Penn.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this bill? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3456. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3414.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3414 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 3414 to the House with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3414.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3414 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 3414 to the House with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Yes.
I just want to reiterate at this point, I'm no on this. I really think maybe it takes opportunities away from people in the originating counties to serve, and have some concerns.
Call roll.
No.
Aye.
Having received the required vote, House Bill 3414 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Thatcher will carry the bill. Any other business?
Okay.
2222. Thank you. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2222.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2222 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 2222 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I had talked to both parties separately that were in disagreement at one point. One was the Farm Bureau and one was OSHA. And I guess I was kind of thinking in my mind that there were amendments or changes that had been arrived at that were agreed upon. And apparently I was mistaken. So I would like to hear from both of them, if I could, mm-hmm. on what kind of agreement or understanding has been reached. Okay, well, if he could represent that conversation.
Please.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Wood, and I'm the administrator of the Occupational Safety and Health Division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, known as Oregon OSHA. We did have conversations about possible amendments, but ultimately the Farm Bureau indicated that they would be satisfied with a letter from me committing that that rules related to agriculture, Division 4 of our rules, that any changes resulting from this statute would not take effect in relation to Division 4 earlier than July 1st, 2009. And I provided that letter reiterating the agreement. After conversations with the chair and with both Representative Thatcher and Representative Gerard a couple weeks ago, I again talked to Don Schellenberg and confirmed that. And as a matter of fact, when he indicated that he had to leave the hearing just now and walked out, I walked out into the hall again and again confirmed it, and specifically got his encouragement and permission to express that they are fine with the bill as it is, based on the letter that they received from me.
I had conversations with him, and he said he was okay with the bill.
Right. Can I ask why the delay to July 2009? What was the concern there that they would want a delay till 2009?
Chair Riley, Representative Thatcher, based on the testimony and the question, I believe it was, that Representative Beyer asked of Mr. Schellenberg when he testified, I think the concern, and my understanding is, so that if there was a strong concern on the Farm Bureau's part related to the rules that were ultimately adopted or were in process, that they would be able to come to the 2009 legislature and seek redress if that was necessary.
Okay. Other questions?
Thank you.
Call roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Having received the required votes, House Bill 2222 sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Anyone want to volunteer to carry that bill? Representative Gerard, would you? Thank you. Representative Gerard will carry the bill. Any other business? I'm going to end the section, this section of the House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology. Thank you all for being here.